excited to have our guest here from further away than we usually have the opportunity to hear our guests for Digital Dialogues. But also welcome to our folks on live stream, and thank you to the College of Arts and Humanities for providing the live stream facilities. So I will now turn over to Dr. Chaim Levin to introduce our speaker.
Thank you very much, and thanks to MIT for helping to make this possible. My job is to introduce my colleague Daniel Steckel-Ezra from the Ecole des Hautes-Etudes, which is part of the, you actually happily put all the logos on so I have a crew, part of the Research University of Paris, the PSL. And he is presenting now. He and I collaborate on a number of digital projects. He's now presenting on something that is separate but connected, on a project that is collaborative between the Ecole des Hautes Etudes, the University of Haifa, and the National Libraries of Israel, on a crowdsourcing project to automatically transcribe and to train models to automatically transcribe manuscripts and then have manual crowdsourced corrections. Daniel, in addition to being somebody who travels internationally and speaks on crowdsourcing projects, is also a scholar on Judaism, Christianity, and antiquity, works on their interactions. His first book was on the history of Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, in these divergent traditions or overlapping traditions. He worked on Dead Sea Scrolls and published extensively. Some of you here heard him yesterday speak on a text called Toldot Yeshu, which is sort of counter gospel, written by Jews sometime in the antiquity or Middle Ages, 5th century, according to the controversial view of Professor Steckel ben Ezra. But his talk today is on the digital approaches to reading, transcribing, and processing medieval manuscripts.
Thank you very much, Trevor. Thank you very much, Chaim. It's a great pleasure to be here, a great honor to be here. I'm very excited to be in this Center for Technology and the Humanities, which is very well known. Can everybody hear me well? My voice is a little under attack from the different trees that are blossoming so nicely in this great city. Okay. So, first of all, on this slide, there's only my name, but everything that I'm going to present to you is very, very collective. So you'll see some slides with some other names. There may be some names that I've forgotten, I hope not, but it is an honor to represent the different groups here before you. The humanities are currently in a transition that I can only compare to the transition we can observe in astronomy 60 or 70 years ago. So today we're talking about digital humanities. Nobody's talking about digital astronomy. In the 50s, people were still sitting on their printouts of photos on their desks, trying to understand galaxies and different stars and formations and so on. Today everybody is just working on the computer with their 3D models. I believe this will be the case also for the humanities. And one of the foremost tasks we have to learn is to produce, as we talked about during lunch, well-annotated, well-structured raw data, which is quite different from what we've done so far. So the astronomer has the advantage with his 3D models, to be able to have the big picture, compare galaxies, types of galaxies, and go back to each single star. And we have to construct the data in our fields in a similar way, so that we can go and analyze from with natural language processing, for example, the whole literature of a century or of language, as well as the paleographical changes of manuscripts in a certain region or in a certain era, and always, of course, have also the access to each single letter. And that is where I would like to take you today with three projects very briefly explained. They have a Hebrew, two of them have a Hebrew name, one a Latin name. So Sofer Mahi in Hebrew means the fast scribe, or Greek tachygraph. Chaim is actually a partner in that here, so I'll be very brief on that. But we want to work on creating reliable electronic transcriptions of about 12 dozen major manuscripts of the major works of Tanaitic literature. Organize them in a way that we can create an open source repository, and you can quote these texts, Trimledat to IIIF, via the canonical text service or digital text service, which is currently evolving. And together with the Scripta project, create an HDR pipeline via web service that should be accessible by anybody. The transcriptions shall then be deposed next to Ktiv, the huge manuscript collection collected at the National Library of Israel and displayed, preserved in the long term by them, and displayed next to the manuscripts. A second similar but project, but with different emphasis, is called Tikkun Sofrim, meaning scribal correction in Hebrew, together with my friends from the University of Haifa and, again, the National Library of Israel, a project funded by both states, France and Israel. It's a relatively short-term project, and there we focus on crowdsourcing, as the title in the talk says. That will be the second part of this talk. And then Scripta, a Paris-centered project. You see lots of abbreviations here. These are the distinguished institutions of our very new university founded by so the École Pratique des Hautes Études, l'École Française de l'Extrême-Orient, l'École Normale Supérieure, l'École Nationale de Chartres, l'École des Hautes Études en Sciences Sociales, the Collège de France. These are like the MIT and the Institute of Advanced Studies in America, so very distinguished places that have united themselves under the title of PSL. And I certainly have to mention the IRHT, which is associated to this conglomerate, the Institut de Recherche d'Histoire des Textes, which is a CNRS unit. We have inside this university complex a program called Scripta, like so many other projects also, so it's not a very distinctive name, uniting around 100 philologists working on all kinds of scripts, especially ancient scripts and languages. We were talking about Tocharian. You have also experts on ancient Chinese, ancient Egyptian, cuneiform, probably anything on this planet that you can think of, except Maya, if I'm not mistaken, which is not represented there, but with a huge concentration of epigraphers and paleographers. So we want to construct for them a joint digital and computational infrastructure. The whole infrastructure is called Scripta, and I will present to you one block of this, the Scriptorium, in the third part of this talk. So to make the long trip short, here you can see one of our results of automatic transcription of a Latin manuscript of Josephus from the Carolingian area, which is quite exciting, I think. So we arrived here, and these are the old results. We have since then improved by another 0.5%. And most of the errors were spacing errors, and the new method even was able to transcribe, detect some of the abbreviations. I will now, as our project is focusing on Hebrew manuscripts, translate to those and show you here 1.8% character error ratio of the Kaufmann manuscript of the main text area that we achieved with Octopus, an open source tool that you can just install on your computer, which was extremely performant in the recognition. All the layout analysis, however, is geared to printing, so that we had to do on our own, and I'll show that to you a little later on. And Ocropus also only works from left to right, not from right to left, so you had to transcribe everything into Latin characters, change the order, and then revert it back after the recognition. So it was very performant, but kind of cumbersome and less geared towards languages like Arabic, Persian, Hebrew, Syriac. Here, another example which you can see. Where is the pointer?
It disappeared.
Okay. So I'll walk around a little bit. So here another manuscript from the Mishnah, manuscript Cambridge, where you can see that the errors, the main errors, they focus here, where this, the letters move around a little higher, or where the human eye also has a problem. So for those not knowing Hebrew, and the computer doesn't know Hebrew, it's not so easy to decide where this letter here belongs, whether it belongs to this word or that word, whether this is a space or this is a space. Quite detailed already. Or Persian or Hebrew or any other language, and it doesn't necessarily demand Unicode. So if you're working on a script which doesn't have Unicode yet, you can work with your own personalized codec. The way the training data consisted out of 2,000 lines, so about 100 pages, which we got from a colleague who already worked on the manuscript. The only thing we had to do is annotate a little bit the ligatures we also wanted to capture, and some interpunctuation we also wanted to capture. And then we fed this into the machine. We augmented the data. I'll explain that a little later. And we had our training data. Training this manuscript took the first version where we didn't pay attention to ligatures and interpunctuation took, creation of the training data took 2 hours and arrived at the same precision. There's no real difficulties in the page layout here. And the second manuscript here, Palma 3123, same. We arrived at a very good character error ratio with only 580 lines we transcribed, we also received from colleagues. So no real difficulties again. Manuscript Geneva, we had a much lower character error ratio, or higher for errors, almost 9%. And this is the primary case that we uploaded to the web and asked the public to correct, because that's the one where we need the public most. It's the most, the worst automatic transcription in some sense. We used about 1,000 lines for the training data. And the main problem here were the slightly curved lines, which were not so easy always. This is a relatively easy page, and you can see it on this example, but there are a lot of pages which are very much fainted out on one side, where the binarization really causes trouble. And we are now working on a manuscript from the Bodleian, which is very long. And you can clearly see that this will pose serious difficulties just because of the, I call it, Talmudic layout. So you have so far. So until now, also with Kraken, we have worked with a manuscript layout analysis method I've developed, which is coming from a background from the humanities, quite different from that of I've seen elsewhere, but it was working very well. And that's what's counting. It's not so important for me to get a high publication in one of the posh computer science journals. It's important for me to get something which actually does the job. And I call it ZEEF profile. It works very simply. You put all the pages one above the other and look like on the manuscript like through an X-ray. And the signal of the stable text reinforces itself. So as I work on literary manuscripts, the layout is relatively stable, and the columns that usually have the same placement on, I mean, you can distinguish between odd and even pages, you then get kind of blocks if you take the Z profile going from top to the bottom, and can estimate with this relatively easy the location of the usual location of columns, and equally the marginal annotation. So for example, for the Kaufmann manuscript, for all the manuscripts I've shown so far, with the exception of the Bodleian, this works really nicely. The second step, we do then with the block we extract from the manuscript, we apply a seam carve algorithm modified with the heartbeat. This is online. You can find it. It was published at the HIP together with our friends from the University of Fribourg. It also takes another assumption, which for computer scientists is getting a league lower. We assume that the manuscript is regular. It has lines in a regular distance. This is less of a challenge for them, so less of interest for them, but it's very important for us because most of our literary manuscripts are structured like this. I mean, this is what a good scribe does. You take a ruler and you make your lines, and you care that the lines are in the right distance. And the seam carve then allows you to draw a line from right to left to that crosses the least ink possible. Now, it is based on finding peaks in the ink first, and the regular seam carve, as soon as the line is a little shorter and has a lower signal for this line, would unite two lines. So we added this, what I said, called heartbeat, assuming the lines are in a regular distance. So even if you think the signal from the ink here is not strong enough, draw a line and find a nice way from left to right. And it works really very well. From the result, like this, we create line images, which are then cleaned up and, on the other hand, augmented. Augmentation meaning that we apply some kind of distortion to the image in order to make out of 1,000, 9,000 training lines. For example, here the salt and pepper, as it is called, or we slightly tilt the manuscript line, and it worked relatively nicely. Now, the old way for us to work, and there's the eScriptorium platform, will really be the huge difference. The old system was working then simply by with Microsoft Word or with Oxygen, creating a transcription and extracting the text line by line afterwards, because what the system needs as training data is line image and its transcription. So we transformed this with Chaim's code into TI-XML and can use this to twin the transcription lines with the images, feed them into Kraken, and train a model. So I mean, all the training curves look pretty much the same. There's nothing very specific about that. What we have also done is aligning automatic transcriptions with transcriptions we received from other scholars, like here, for example, Michael Krupp for the München manuscript of the Talmud, which also contains the Mishnah. And so I wrote some very basic code to align those, and Chaim added more code to find the exact differences and color code them. So a person who wants to correct the code, the transcription, can do it very, very fast. So this is all engineering in a sense. It is less what computer scientists call science. You would not get a publication at ICDA for this. But we can create well-structured raw data. We can actually get something we can use. Let me now spend the next quarter of an hour or so on the joint project with Haifa, Tikkun Sofri, so the other main PIs are Zvika Kuflik from their information department and Moshe Lavi from Jewish Studies, with many, many people who help us either on the data side or on the development side. The Ktiv project of the National Library of Israel has so far collected, you can see it here, about 70,000 manuscripts, written Hebrew characters from the whole world. They're sending digitizing teams around the major libraries and also minor libraries around the world, and either pay or do the photographing themselves, and the library gets a copy, and the National Library gets a copy, and then there's a contract, different contract according to each library, whether you are allowed or not to display, to download, to import it via IIIF. There, every library has its own decisions. And they say, we said, okay, Ktiv brings all these nice pictures to the people, but these pictures are pictures. You can't really do a lot with them if they are not transformed into text. You can't Google them. So we want to bring the people to the manuscripts in order, on the one hand, to correct all the mistakes in our automatic transcriptions. Because if you consider that a manuscript has, let's say, 1 million characters, just 3% error means only 30,000 errors. It's a huge amount of errors. You have an error every line. You would not really like a graduate student to give you a transcription like this. If you have 9% error ratio, you will see it in a second. The computer can do a lot with 9% error ratio, but for us, we wouldn't use it and import it into an article. So what we want to do with Tikkun Sofri is, on the one hand, to produce very good transcriptions of these manuscripts that are open source and directly linked in KTIV, but also to expose the general public to manuscripts, to get people, and in the Jewish world, we are lucky that there are many erudite people that are able to decipher medieval manuscripts. This is not the case in all traditions. It's much harder to read Greek minuscule, I think, than a medieval Hebrew. So there's also an educational side to it, that we want to engage the public and get them back to engage with us. So far, I think it has been quite successful. So you can check it out. If you type Tikkun Tzufrim in Google, you should find, on the one hand, our blog, and on the other hand, the transcription interface. That is still the old version. The new version should be out tomorrow, hopefully. So the old version is based on Java, and the new one on Vue JavaScript. And there's also a transition involved from MySQL to NoSQL. So you can either sign up as a with your named ID or as a guest and land at an interface like this in Hebrew, English, or French. And what you see here below, I believe, is the automatic transcription, which is, in this case, I believe, too good. So I should have chosen a different line. You can, and that belongs to the educational side of it, get some information. So for example, there's a small tab that you can hit and learn a little bit about ligatures, about abbreviations, about editing signs we use, markup in order to signify additions and deletions. And so far, we have had interaction with 2,000 people, according to Google Analytics, of which about 200 have actually transcribed some lines. A page is 18 or 19 lines usually, so about 100 have transcribed a whole page, which is quite nice. And then we have super users and mega users, we call them. So we have about 46 people now. This data is already a week old. We should have a couple of more that have transcribed at least 5 pages. And mega users, that they are amazing. 5 people that have transcribed thousands of pages of lines, literally. There's one who has transcribed more than 5,000 lines. So he spent quite some time recently, and he probably knows the script of this manuscript better than we do. So until last week, we have gathered about 40,000 validated lines. You can either hit on submit, or I'm not really sure, so pass this line. So 40,000 of them hit submit. And this makes about, and we collect for every single line 5 transcriptions in order to be able to mitigate between the different transcriptions, because some will be better, one will do a mistake here, one will do a mistake there. So 5 transcriptions by 5 different users. So far we have collected about 5,000 lines, and now it should be quite a bit more. And this results in about 266 complete pages, which we have already reconstructed. And I'll show you the results in a second. Out of 590 total, I think we are now 6 weeks in service, which is nice. So this is the user interaction. And you can see that, so here we started. You can see there are relatively regular lows. I'll explain that in a minute. And for anybody who's coming from a Jewish background, the explanation is logical. And then there are other lows that are very simple technical explanation that the site was down for this or that reason. We hope that the first one, which is has really done nicely, the second one after tomorrow, will have a little less downs. And then you see here a very high peak. This is when we had the first journal articles coming out, and Israel Hayom and Arutz Sheva. And Arutz Sheva actually included a link to the site, and that drew an enormous amount of users to the site. You have also here in this period, where you have a notable decrease, the main person responsible for Facebook interaction, and Facebook has played a very big role in it. You have to entertain the crowd in order to keep them there. You have to show them funny automatic translations. I have no example here, but one was talking about Choco instead of Oso, if I remember it correctly, or something like that. So about chocolate instead of its maker. One was actually mentioning Jesus in connection with God, and obviously this needed to be corrected. So in this period, the main people for Facebook interaction were not able to interact with Facebook. So we have the impression that that made an important negative impact. Here you can have the same graph visualized by week. And here you have the weekdays. And so you can clearly see that Fridays and Saturdays, a lot of the people, I think, and for Latin, it might really be exactly the contrary, or for Greek. So a lot of the people that interact with the site will not seize data on the Sabbath. So they come from a religious background or spend simply time with their families. They have the opposite attitude to what a retired teacher in Greek or Latin might have, that is, especially in the spare time, he would dedicate his time to transcribing, so you would see a high on the weekend. So what's the quality? I hope this is large enough. This is the first completely automatically reconstructed page from user transcriptions. You have one red box which is wrong. So what I used was very, very simple. I took the transcriptions, at least five up till nine, for every line of these 260 pages for which we have transcriptions. And on the word level, I compared, and the word that appeared most got voted into the text, and the others did not. If there was equality, it was the first vote. I was amazed that this was enough. So I suppose that we have to go and evaluate which user makes better transcriptions and weigh his input higher than those of... we may have to do this for those kind of incidents. But by and large, already this very, very simple method was quite successful. So if we go to the user evaluation, with regard to this page I just showed, there was one user who didn't log in with his with a named login, or just as a guest, and we only keep the sessions. So we have several guests working at the same time. We can distinguish them, this person transcribed six lines in 1 minute, and it gives us a little indication how much time they actually have to spend to transcribe a single line. Another user spent 15 minutes, and the differences to the final result are notable. So this transcriber is not as proficient as the others, but if we go here, for example, this user spent only 7 minutes on the whole page, has two differences to the final result, of one which would actually have been correct. The one red place I indicated, this person had the right solution. And another super user, or mega user even, transcribed the whole page in only 4 minutes. I wouldn't be able to do that. Corrected the automatic transcriptions in 4 minutes. So to be clear, I think I omitted that. What we show users here is the automatic transcription resulting from Kraken inside here, and the user just has to correct things he or she perceives as mistakes. So obviously this goes faster and is a little more correct than starting from scratch. But it also has the danger that the user accepts the automatic transcription, which may contain errors. So future improvements, we can certainly make this analysis much more sophisticated. What I said, weighing the responses based on the individual expertise, which we can now also evaluate with regard to the text that has been automatically reconstructed. We might give a bonus if somebody actually makes a change in the automatic transcription. This means that he invests energy into something, so there is a higher chance that the new solution might be correct than somebody who just accepts what is there without really investing something. And we might do an alignment not only on the word level but on the letter level, so accept all the letters that have the majority in the different responses, which would also have resulted in the text without the red box. I will now pass to the Escriptorium and Escripta, what we are building in Paris, because what you have seen here involves a lot of interaction with a black screen, Kraken or Octopus, with code I've written in MATLAB, and which I know how to use, but there's no proper interface anybody else would quickly understand. So what we are building is an envelope around this with a web service where you can upload manuscripts and do all this through a nice web interface. This is done mainly by Robin Tissot, first quality chief developer. All the artificial intelligence stuff behind it is done by Benjamin Kiesling, well known to Matt, and who is doing fantastic stuff, a really fantastic job. You will see it soon, and I'm sure you will be amazed. Then Peter Stokes and myself try to give the input from the scholarly side so that the development goes into the direction that most fits our needs. Mark B is there as a scientific advisor, and we have a second developer arriving this week or next week, Hassan Garjem. I will give the links at the end of this talk. The stuff is completely open source, and we are actively looking forward to engage other teams and other universities to co-develop and co-sponsor this development, because we are completely aware that for the long-term sustainability, only a collective effort will provide the solution. So for the digital computational platform, which we call Escripta, the whole, we are using for the first state a couple of bricks. So I will show you now the Escriptorium, which is a transcription and annotation interface. Around on the automatic side, Kraken as one, but we will go further to automatic classification of scripts, whether it's geographical or style or dating. So there will be further automatic analysis on the paleographical side outside of Kraken. Then the other break on the left side, you may know, or the medievalists among you may know, Peter Stokes, who formerly was at King's College, now is at our school, who has produced an infrastructure called Archetype, which is also open source, still maintained by and further developed by King's College London, which allows very deep annotation of paleography on the one side, but also of art objects. This will be the deep annotation brick of our infrastructure on the visual side, but the e-scriptorium will also allow you to annotate, for example, the biography of the manuscript, deletions, annotations, and named entities, linguistic annotation. For the publication, we build on what Chaim and I already tested in our joint rabbinic project, TI Publisher, as of now, an exist database platform, also open source. And then there's a fifth brick mentioned here, programmed by our friends from the École Nationale de Chartres, who are programming a post-correction tool for linguistic annotation. So for data that has been annotated morphologically and needs post-correction. I will do the daring step of going online. Okay, I'll leave this presentation. If it doesn't work, it may. This morning there was a mishap. Let me see whether we can go here. What do I have to do? Maybe this. Yeah, okay. Okay, it's a little small, but let's see. So this is the e-scriptorium. So you have here the list of the different documents, and we can try to create a new one. Let's work from scratch. The metadata is still extremely simple, so I just create a document. I can then upload images. Let's upload an image. Okay. It's taking place in Europe. So it needs some time. Sometimes it goes extremely fast, sometimes it takes just a little longer. Then one can go to editing, and one could now annotate manually, this is a line, this is a column, and get boxes here, or one can do this automatically. What helps is if one, in the current version, if one first marks up a column, it goes a little strange for me because the screen is much smaller than habitually. Now, can I come here? Okay, lines will be wide. No problem. So you can see already on the right side and on the left side boxes. We will probably boil this down to only two displays so that you would have the annotation for the layout and the transcription here. And if you now go back and select this, there are two steps necessary before transcription. The technical step of binarizing, because currently the algorithm still works with binarization. That's not a good sign. But I showed it to you, to Trevor before, so I've got a witness here. I will go to what you will see as a result. Here. Right, second. Yeah, the screen. The VGA makes the screen very, very low. So, very small. So the line segmentation was done completely automatically here. And you would then launch the automatic transcription. For launching an automatic transcription, you would need a trained model. If not, you first have to train a model. This is already possible. It's not yet on my interface, but Robin can already train a model. And then you can go to the different lines, and you can correct relatively ergonomically the different each line. So we can add whatever is wrong here. And the automatic transcription here is less good than it should actually be, because the automatic segmentation currently in Kraken is not as good as the one you used for training the model. So obviously, the result should be less good. This looks really nice, so we can just go to the next line. Now, I don't want other people to test my Latin, because that is not my not my proficiency. But you have gotten an idea. Let's see whether the other object works. What is very nice is that one can zoom in, and the things are twinned, so any format can be actually analyzed. So whether you have a landscape or a portrait or a huge table you would like to analyze, yes, it can be in there. And you see that it is connected via this linked object. So if we go out a second, we can decide that we don't want to see the line segmentation. So all this is a little bigger. It's relatively nicely done. If we go back to my documents, let's see whether he still says that he's working. Oh no. Okay, so now you see he's active. We'll have to wait for some seconds. Sometimes this is very fast, sometimes this is less fast, and you can do it on the whole manuscript and drink a coffee in the meantime. What counts for me is the quality of the final result, not the time. So I am happy if the final result is 98% correct. It is more important to me, and I can wait one day longer than if I have to correct another 10,000 errors. So the binarization is done. We can say segment. And I will let this thing work and show you some of the nice things that are coming up. Because as I said, this is based on the old line segmentation. Now, the new line segmentation Ben has developed is able to find lines directly. I mean, there are still things to improve here, but the complex layout there, and Matt knows this stuff because he has helped in the annotation and validation of the annotation. So very complex layout of Persian and Arabic manuscripts. This has been trained with 400 annotated images, which are relatively easy to produce. This is an automatic annotation. The computer has found these lines. I was absolutely struck when I first saw this image. And so vertical lines, oblique lines, And the system even finds here the couple of letters that I've written above. There are some oversights here. In this illuminated manuscript with a very complex layout, it's the system who found the right lines. And the first, remember, the Talmudic layout manuscript, there are a couple of lines missing here, but this is mainly because of the post-processing where we need still to improve. And then there are some lines which are connected here where we need still to separate. But if the automatic segmentation will not be 100%, you just need a small tool that cuts and before you launch the transcriber. On the we are also working on the analysis, the automatic analysis of papyri, so that we can segment here script, object, and other things, as well here from Qumran, which is rather complex. And I end up here with the links. Let's have a short look. Yeah, the segmentation is done. Okay. As so. Here are the line boxes. And now let's do our automatic transcription. Choose a model. And now you see here the system is working hard. If we go here, we might already see the first lines have already been transcribed. Okay, so this is, yeah, not unlike the one I already showed you before. Same errors, which is logical. Let me end here. And as I said, this stuff is open source. Please don't hesitate to be in contact with us. We are actively looking forward to collaborating with others. Thank you very much.
Still blown by the automatic transcription.
Ben.
Out of curiosity, the rate of error that you're getting on transcription from manuscripts, how does it compare with the rate of error that we get from OCR on printed books?
So the same system absolutely can be used on printed books. And the same system has been used for printed books, and Ben has especially developed a lot of time for our RoboScript, again, because it's very complex, and other systems do not work well on it. And there you can, for printed, where you have a much more homogeneous record, for complex stuff you can arrive at 99% correct, so 1% error. For our script and documents, for Latin script or for English, where the training sets can be even much bigger, it may even transpass that and go into the 99.5 percentage. But for manuscript, there are other systems around. There is, for example, Transcribus, with a notable disadvantage that Transcribus is closed source, is not open source, and you can't download your models and just change code in your system. And the transcription interface is open source, but the diamonds behind below the hood are not. The systems are about the same precision. The difference then comes from the amount of training data. And that's one of the reasons we have to collaborate on open source so that we can also share training data and achieve better results, but results that are open.
What do you see as the most difficult problem that we need to tackle, and by we I mean those of us who are working on pre-modern documents, manuscripts. What do you see as the most difficult kind of computer science problem that we have to crack?
Oh, there are many. So one, one I think is binarization. There is still, at least inside Kraken, there is still a way to solve that. The most difficult is definitely layout analysis, and especially if you go to text lots such as newspapers, that's a huge, I mean, it's very difficult to know if you look on the New York Times, you need to understand the text in order to know what belongs together. And if you think that the article, Ben was writing a message on this morning, if you see that an article can continue on page 7 and you have to connect both, that is an incredibly difficult task. I think it will, we have not yet worked on Devanagari and things like that that are highly connected. There is the big quest of finding automatically the correct model, the best model that would achieve the best results. There is the a huge advantage of aligning existing transcriptions of similar or the same manuscript or text with what we are seeing here before us. They're not necessarily extremely complex problems in computer science, but we need engineering solutions. We need things that work. And you actually have somebody extremely important in document analysis at Maryland University, David Dorman. He gave once a talk at ICDA, at the International Conference for Document Analysis and Recognition, and right into my heart, in the sense that he said, all these theoretical that a lot of which he said are looking really like the same. The important thing is that they actually work on the ground. That if you work with an archive, if you work with a national system, that you actually can produce something with it. So that is where we need bridges of smart people between faculties or departments of computer sciences and departments on faculties in the humanities that actually finance, like we now are so lucky to have Ben with us at PSL. We are so lucky. But this is a job we received directly from the ministry because we asked for a position like that. No, it's very hard to get money for this inside the university system where the money in the humanities is very, very limited, and humanities scholars are highly reluctant to transfer some of their money to computer scientists. They think they get enough money all the time. Why should we do that? For the computer scientists, this is not an interesting topic. I mean, it's much more interesting to working with the Faculty of Medicine, which has $1 billion budget in this year, and not the tiny humanities thing where you can't get a really new interesting article out of it. But in order to produce results on the ground, we need engineers and artificial intelligence engineers and people like Raffaele, of very good engineering skills in institutions that have to be created. And you are very lucky here at Maryland that you already have an institution like this that can actually, that has a roof and accommodates people. You need to convince your university heads to get more. But just as biology, I mean, just as biology or has needs for engineers, we in the humanities now do have needs for engineers, very concrete needs for engineers. This is not, a lot of what I'm doing now is spending time engineering instead of writing a new article. Okay, I can't get promoted anymore, so fine, I'm done. I'm spending this because I think it's just the most important thing I have to do now. But another person who's still in the beginning of his career or her career can't have this luxury. So it's I think more sociological, sociological issue than a scientific issue.
We're sending that video clip to the provost.
Please do. Also an article. Please.
What do you think motivates the people who participate in your crowdsourcing?
I don't know. I think educated, especially religious Jews, are closer to sources anyhow. Mm-hmm. I think the experience working on medieval Greek or medieval Latin would be different. So we tried to work in parallel with a site in Israel called 929, mm-hmm. which is a project that where people read one chapter of the Bible every day. Mm-hmm. This is 929 chapters in the Hebrew Bible. And the traffic that came from 929 was rather low scale. Mm-hmm. Most interaction came from people that heard about the project either in the news or from friends or saw a presentation. We have mm-hmm. several companion scholars that contribute quite a bit, but then the mega users, mm-hmm. they just like it to like the idea. I am not interacting with Facebook myself, so I don't have an informed answer there. We have to ask Moshe to give a more specific answer then. But if you are trying it, it nudges. When you've just transmitted and corrected a line and you tuck, see a new line, and yeah, again there is a mistake. You can't leave this. You get addicted to it. I get addicted to it. I mean, this is something in the mind of a person. If you are living with children and the child writes something and there's a mistake in it, will you leave it like this? On the fridge, leaves a sign. Will you leave it like this, or will you ask it the child to correct it? Or you correct it yourself. It's something in the human mind that doesn't like to see mistakes.
Well, let's say thank you again for a wonderful visit.